The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
Good morning and welcome to Campus Voices. I'm Richard Gordon, and I'm joined in the studio today by intern Julia Giambastiani. And between the two of us, we're going to interview three members of the University of Delaware chapter of Engineers Without Borders. We have the president, Sarah Hartman, and we've got Meredith Simon Pearson, and we've got Natalie Munessis. Sarah, you're the president of the organization. Tell us a little bit about it.
So to begin, Engineers Without Borders at the University of Delaware is part of a national organization. And as a whole, what we do is we use engineering skills to improve the lives of individuals and communities abroad. So over a 5 to 7 year period, we will partner with different communities around the world, and we'll work on some sort of infrastructure project that the community identifies as one of its largest needs. And so this year is actually a really exciting year for us at the University of Delaware. We are celebrating our 10th year. So we were founded in 2006, and now we're coming full circle as we look at two successful projects in the past in Cameroon and Guatemala, and as we look forward with our current projects in the Philippines and Malawi. The other student members that we have here today are from those projects in Malawi and the Philippines.
One of the things that's really cool, Sarah, is that when you were last with us, you were working on the Philippines project, and that was like about 18 months ago. And that really points to sort of like the longevity or how long it takes to run these projects.
I would say that's one of the strongest points of Engineers Without Borders is we're really looking for long-term partnerships. We don't think of them just as a project. It's also about the interactions that we have with the communities that we partner with over the years. And you can see that on the student side in the way we train our students. So we are always focused on looking towards the future and training the younger students so that they're prepared to run the projects once the older students, the more experienced students, have graduated. So our project manager role is the most important role for our projects, and we support freshman project managers all the way through senior project managers.
Natalie, I understand you've got a relative who's actually living in the village that you guys are working on in the Philippines.
Yes, so the way that we were able to make our connection with our project in the Philippines, when I was a freshman coming to the University of Delaware, Engineers Without Borders was looking for a new project to begin, and this is where I was enlightened by my background, and I was able to use the needs that the community was looking for and the needs that UWB was able to satisfy and therefore make a connection with my grandparents. So my grandparents grew up in this community of Ubuhan in Bohol, Philippines, that we are currently doing a water chlorination and distribution project in. They currently spend 6 months in the United States and then also 6 months living in the Philippines. So they have been our main point of contact. They're our translator, our communication help, our resource help. They have really provided a strong and stable partnership between us and the community. So a lot of hurdles that we come across is with communication. So they have really brought down the barrier for that.
Meredith, the project you're working on in Malawi is also a water project, but it's not cleaning up dirty water. It's actually finding it.
That's correct. So in our project in Malawi, we work with a group of villages in the Sakata region. And this past summer, we were able to travel to a community called Impero, where we drilled a borehole well to provide potable water, drinkable water for the 500 residents of the community. And this is a community that before now had no access to clean water within their own community. They had to walk up to a kilometer and a half and carry water in buckets on their heads back and forth to get clean water. And so it was really exciting for us to finally, after 2 years of research, to be able to go and drill this well and give water to these people.
Something interesting that I think I read about your region is that the age demographic there is really, really young. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Malawi is one of the top 5 poorest countries in the world. And with that comes a lot of public health challenges. most of the community work, the most of the community members in Impero and in the Sakata region are subsistence farmers, and they have really limited access to healthcare and clean water. And so the age expectancy is much lower, but there's a really booming childbearing happening in the villages that we work in. There are tons of kids. As we drive in, they chase after the car, and as we leave, they chase us as far as they can possibly run, waving and screaming, and they love singing and dancing with us the whole time we're there. So it's really fun.
What are the stages of projects like this, from research to completion? Will you get to see it from beginning to end?
So all of our projects, in any community we work in, we make a 5 to 7 year commitment. So those 5 to 7 years mean that we spend a number of years doing what we call assessment, which is research. So we visit the community, and we're not just researching what type of project we're going to do, but we're also getting to know that community and building a relationship with them, because a big part of our projects is about community empowerment. So in our Malawi project, in our assessment phase, we did research on where we could possibly find different sources of water. If we were going to do rainwater catchment or drill a well or do some other kind of technology. So we do technology research, but we also helped create a water committee. And our water committee is actually made up completely of women. So we create a water committee. We help the community think about how they're going to save money in the long term so that they can own this project and maintain it completely separate and without EWB. And then after the technology has been implemented, we return to the community for monitoring and evaluation. So we continue to support the community and the project after it's completed to make sure that it can be sustainable and supported in the long term.
How are those phases different for you, having your grandparents there? Was it faster, or was it?
I wouldn't say faster, but it was definitely, each project is different in its own way. So some people need to do more assessment trips. Some people need to do more monitoring and evaluation after implementation. However, us being able to go on these assessment trips with my grandparents it really eased the communication barrier, like I said before, and also made it more comfortable for everyone in the group. They were able to lead us through this community and kind of just create an instant bond. So they were able to introduce us as people they know and that they trusted, so that way it was easier for the community to be able to trust us.
Natalie, these other two, I can understand exactly why they're involved with water projects. Sarah's an environmental engineer, and Meredith's a civil engineer. But you're a biomedical engineer. How did you decide to get involved in a water project?
Being involved in engineering is in itself a very multidisciplinary subject. So me being a biomedical engineering student, yes, it obviously has been a very different type of atmosphere for the project itself. But also, yes, family was a driving force. But once you get to know this community and once you get to know these projects, it becomes a part of your everyday life. These projects have really just been able to help me develop my project management skills, my grant writing skills, just working with big teams and being able to work with an international community has really developed my skills as an engineer, which I have been able to apply in my classes.
And something that I would add on with what Natalie just said is that although we're called Engineers Without Borders, there's a lot that we do beyond the engineering. And so you could spend the entire span of your 4 years within Engineers Without Borders as an undergraduate doing completely non-engineering related activities. We really have a wealth of opportunities for every student that walks through, regardless of their background, regardless of where they want to go. Again, going back to that idea of student development, it's a lot of encouraging our students to try new things that might be applicable to the future workforce. May that be presentations, grant writing, fundraising, event planning. You know, we do the whole nine yards. A lot of what we do is fundraising. And so in order to fundraise, you have to go out into the community, the newer community, that is, really just spread your wings. So there's a lot of opportunities even beyond engineering.
And to speak to what Natalie was saying about her experience as a biomedical engineer working on these types of projects, one of the main tenets of an EWB project is that we serve the community. And so what dictates the type of project that we're working on is the community's needs. The way we start a project is by visiting with a community and talking to them about what their top needs are in terms of what our skill set is and what problems we can help solve for them. And so it just so happens that all of our projects are water projects because these communities had a big need for water. For me, it's something that is really inspirational in working on these projects because we put in a lot of hours. But at the end of the day, these are real people and their real needs, and it's their biggest need. And everyone needs clean water. And so that's something that's really satisfying and also contributes to this long-term sustainability of the project, that it's really about what the community needs, not about what we think they need, but what they're telling us that they need.
We're in the studio today with Meredith Simon Pearson, a civil engineering junior at the university, and Natalie Meneses, who's a junior in biomedical engineering, and Sarah Hartman, an environmental engineering senior and the president of the chapter this year of EWB. And Sarah, before we get any further, I think you probably have a big fundraising dinner you want to plug.
So as I previously mentioned, we are in our 10-year anniversary phase right now. And so we are holding our annual benefit dinner this year. It will be on April 20th. It's a Thursday from 6:30 to 9 p.m. in the Patrick Harker Ice Lab. And this one will actually be a special event for us because we are, again, celebrating our 10 years. And so looking back on the past and where we've come from to where we're going in the future. And we're also very excited to have as one of our guest speakers, the founder of EWB USA. This would be a wonderful opportunity to both support our projects and also hear about the history of EWB.
Meredith, what kinds of support do you get from EWB National and from the local engineering community on these projects?
From EWB USA, they're our umbrella organization. So they help guide us through the project process and help us understand what needs to happen in assessment, what needs to happen in design, what needs to happen in monitoring and evaluation. And so they provide that kind of support for us. They also have biannual grants that they award. So we will often apply for grants and get monetary support from EWB USA. And locally, we have a great wealth of professional mentors. So every project has a responsible engineer in charge, an REIC, who is a volunteer professional engineer who works with our project on every aspect of the design and signs off on every step of the design.
So it's not just faculty.
It's not just faculty. It's local professionals. The Malawi project, our current REIC, comes all the way from Long Island, actually. But we were really, really lucky to find him, and he traveled with us this past summer on our implementation trip to Malawi, and he was really touched by the experience. And he owns his own company, and he's been working really hard his entire career, and he's at a point where he feels like he finally has the time and the space to give back. And so he's really excited to be involved in our project and to continue and hopefully travel with us again in the future.
Natalie, what about your project?
In common, we have the same faculty advisors that give us much support. Shout out to Dr. Kim Bothy and Dr. Abigail Clark-Saylor. We also have a large alumni pool that we get to tap into. We like to stay in contact with all of the alumni that graduate either from UD in general or that have been a large help with Engineers Without Borders. So obviously, the wealth of knowledge that each Engineers Without Borders member holds as they go through their college years is great to tap into each new year that new project managers come up and come up with any questions.
When are you guys headed back to the Philippines?
Our next scheduled trip, which will be our first implementation trip, is going to be in June. So in this implementation trip, we are going to begin to create our chlorination and distribution system. So we're going to set up in an already existing well using an already existing reservoir and chlorinate the community's groundwater that is very heavily contaminated with fecal coliform, which obviously no human should have to drink. And then we will begin to do a PVC piping distribution system that will provide this clean water to several communal taps.
And Meredith, what about you? When do you go back to Malawi?
Our Malawi team will be traveling this August 2017 on an assessment trip. So in August 2015, we traveled to the community of Mpero and we drilled two borehole wells and provided water for that community. And while we were there, we also began thinking about our next community partnership. And so this summer, we'll be starting a new partnership with a neighboring community called Chilimani, where we're thinking, well, we've spoken with the community and we're working with them on either a potable water project again or potentially a bridge project. Because there's a bridge there that the community has a lot of burden in the cost of repairing, but many communities on one side of the river use this bridge as a main access point because on the other side is the hospital and the market and other essential things. we're looking at a long-term partnership with that community as well. And as we're assessing in Chilimani, we will go back to Impero and see how our wells are doing and see how the community is doing and continue that relationship. But all of our projects in the Sakata region would not be possible without our in-country NGO Villages in Partnership, VIP. And VIP, this is a way that the Malawi project is really different from the Philippines project. The Philippines project has Natalie's family community ties. And the Malawi project, in place of that, has an NGO that we work with, this VIP. And there are eyes and ears on the ground. There are translators. So when we can't be there, we speak with VIP staff members, and they communicate with the community for us and back and forth. And so they're really an essential piece to all of our projects in Malawi.
That actually raises an interesting issue, that whole idea of communicating while you're not there. And it's a very different situation for the two projects.
Yeah, so for the Philippines project, we have several different methods that we like to keep in contact with our community members, but we have found that one main resource is our community members love Facebook. So Facebook has actually created a great social media way for us to keep in contact with them. Each individual member that has been able to meet the community members on the EWB side has at some point individually messaged a community member just about the excitement of the project, the excitement of partnerships, just getting to know each other in general, talking about their personal lives and their family members. And it's been a great way to make sure to the community that that the Engineers Without Borders team is continuously working. We like to post pictures. We like to keep them updated. But we also are able to email them for more formality sake. And then we also do a lot of international phone calls. Through these phone calls, we have found it is a little hard to understand each other just through the distance and the language barrier. But having phone calls in real time is a great way to communicate with them, because then you get a real sense of who they are, what they're doing over there, how they're preparing for our project, and how we're preparing to implement a project over there for them.
And in Malawi, in the Sakata region, we have a really different situation because there is, for the most part, no electrical power and no internet in our communities. And so that makes Villages in Partnership, this NGO, an even more essential piece to the success of our projects, because they really become the main communication point between the community and EWB. We also, in the process of implementing, and I think the Philippines has a similar situation, we've learned a lot about hiring outside contractors, because the type of work that we're doing, EWB can't bring a drill rig to Malawi to drill a well. So we have to hire a local well driller, which is an extreme learning experience. Whether you're a biomedical engineer or a civil engineer, the process of hiring a contractor is something that is a really unique experience for a student to get the chance to learn. And doing that internationally is a whole nother level. And so the Malawi team learned, it took us a long time to figure this out, but we were sending a lot of emails to contractors and not getting any responses. And then we learned that, oh, if we send a text message and say, we sent you an email, then we'll get a response, because everybody there has a phone. Even like way out in the rural villages, people have phones. So if you can send them a text, then you can get the communication going. And so that was a really funny thing to learn. Our challenge also is that in Malawi, they speak Chichewa, and nobody on our team speaks Chichewa, and we have not found anybody locally who speaks Chichewa. And so that's another way that Villages in Partnership is really essential to us. And we're also really lucky because on this past trip, one of our translators is a kid named Isaac. He's 19 or 20 years old, and he's an engineering student in Malawi. He studies mechanical engineering. And so we became really close with him, and I still talk to him probably like once a week. So if we're ever in need of immediate translation, I can always WhatsApp Isaac and ask him for help, which is really great.
After you go and you implement, do you have a way of educating the people into sustaining it? What's that process like?
One of the large components that EWB USA and EWB UD incorporates is what's called an educational program. So what comes within this educational program is, one, educating individuals on what's going on, why the problems are arising within their community, and how we plan to solve these problems, and also how to maintain the solution to their problems. So With that comes lots of operation and maintenance training for the members of the community to ensure the longevity of the project. So obviously we're not going to be able to be there forever. So to have the community members themselves be able to sustain the projects on their own is the most essential part, because they need to know how to maintain, how to replace pieces within the project. And also having an education program that will be able to last years, so the coming generations will be able to sustain this project.
In Malawi this summer, we were lucky enough to have Villages in Partnership, VIP, our partner NGO. They have a borehole well expert on staff, and he leads trainings regularly within communities. And so he came and worked with our water committee and their village implementation committee. And so by the time we left, this group of community members could take the entire pump apart, name all the parts, put it all back together in a song. And also, if you said, this weird thing is happening, they could say, oh, maybe it's this part or maybe it's this part. And so a big piece of the operation and maintenance and the sustainability of the project is really empowering the community to take full ownership of the project.
Something I'm noticing in this interview is you seem so passionate about your projects. Has there been anything specific that you've learned or that has touched or moved you that you want to talk about?
Just seeing these people face to face is no other experience that can be described. Most of us would consider their living conditions subpar, but they're extremely happy all the time. They wanted to sing karaoke with us every night that we were there. There was never a person without a smile on their faces that didn't want to get to know us. Just getting to know the people is the best part.
And for me, I'm really fortunate I was able to travel to Malawi twice. So I was able to go on the first assessment trip to Mpero in August 2015 and then return in August 2016 for our implementation trip. And so on the first trip, I really was able to see firsthand what life was like in Mpero and how great the need for water was. And also, every time I'm there, I'm so touched that these are just people and they want the same thing we do, which is just safe, clean water for their children. That's just so touching. And so then to be able to return in August 2016 and be there as water came shooting out of the ground and know that this community now had access to clean water right there in their own village is just a really unbelievable experience. And the community is so full of joy. So as the water is gushing out, everyone is singing and dancing and celebrating. And a woman who's the head of the water committee stood up and said, in my whole life, there has never been water here in Mpero. And now you have brought water to Mpero. So I'm just really proud that we were able to do that.
I just wanted to add a little comment about the commitment of our partnering communities, just to give you a feel for how much they really invest in our projects. So on the second assessment trip to the Philippines, the main purpose why we were there was to test all of the water supplies in the community and to understand what were the limitations of their water quality. And so we were building up to this one day where we were all prepared to go out to every single source across the entire village. And we're talking kilometers here. And so we had this grand plan. We were going to start at 8 a.m. And we were planning to have most of it done by early afternoon. So we set out, the student team and all of our friends in the Water Council of Ubohan. And we start out really strong and we just keep working. We're collecting all of our samples. And the plan was to collect all of the samples throughout the entire village, keep them chilled throughout the day, and then start our tests right in the middle of town, right in the heart of town at that community center. And so we could tell by lunchtime that things were going a little bit slower than we had previously thought. And so by the time we actually started testing the water, it was probably about 5 p.m. And so keep in mind that we've been with the Water Council since 8 a.m. And the students, we're passionate about this. We want to keep going. We're so excited to see what the results of the tests are. And we told the community, we were like, no, no, go home. It's been a long day. We can take care of it. But they insisted on staying. And not only did they stay, but they helped with all of the tests and they started bringing us food. They brought us plates and plates of fried bananas with sugar on top and fresh fruit and rice and just all of these wonderful treats. And so it just turned into this really fun time. The kids were out of school, so they were all kind of popping their heads around us, trying to see what we were doing. And it was a really great experience. You know, we were there until 7 p.m. easily, and they didn't complain once. And it was so wonderful to have them there through that entire process and to see that they weren't just there for the fun part. They were there for getting down to business. And what was incredible was the next day, we started at 8 a.m. again, and they were all there waiting for us. And that was just wonderful.
During our implementation trip, there's really, really busy moments, and then there's kind of slow moments. And during the slow moments, we would spend time playing games and chatting with all the little kids in the community. And one day, there were two little girls, Sola and Mercy, who are two of my favorite little girls in the community. And we were talking to them, and someone asked them, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And Mercy says, "When I grow up, I want to be a teacher." And then someone turns to Sola and they say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And she says, "When I grow up, I want to be an engineer," which was just a really amazing moment for our team of all female students to be there and see that this little girl also wanted to grow up to be an engineer. And now she would have clean water, so hopefully she would be able to.
This whole Engineers Without Borders is fascinating because you have projects that last 5 to 7 years, and most of you graduate in 4 years.
I think beyond the work that we do abroad, one of the most rewarding aspects, at least serving as president, is seeing the growth of the students, because it's really easy to focus on the amazing work that we do internationally, but I think that undersells the amount of growth that we have within our student body here. I think the more years you've been in EWB, the more you start to appreciate how far you've come from the beginning in terms of personal development, in terms of understanding yourself and where you fit in the world. Just, I think being in EWB really shows you how, if you have this dream, you can turn this dream into a reality and really change people's lives. And so to be able to empower students in that way is so incredible because, you know, you might not walk into college thinking that you can change the lives of hundreds of people. And so being able to give students this opportunity through EWB is so incredibly rewarding. And no matter if you go on the trips or not, you're really contributing to improving these lives, improving the individuals in the communities, but also improving all of the students that come through EWB.
To me, EWB is another example of the kind of thing that your dean, Tunde Oganaike, talks about, you know, with the trying to get creative engineers and to sort of break the mold of engineers of my age being the guys with the slide rules and the pocket protectors, you know, sitting in an office just calculating. I mean, you guys are out there working on real world problems.
I think the College of Engineering has been so incredible throughout the entire past 10 years, honestly. They've been with us since the beginning, and they have been the glue that keeps us together. They support us in multiple ways with technical expertise, may that be a professor or may that be reaching out to the alumni network to find professionals to help us. The college is always there to help us with that component. They also help a lot with communications, public relations, and events. So the benefit dinner would not be possible without the college, and we are extremely grateful of all of their support.
Why would that be April?
April 20th, 20th. Yes.
April 20th.
April 20th, please come. It's going to be a wonderful event. If you like international food, we will be serving some food from both the Philippines and Malawi, and we'll have presentations from both of our project teams, so you can hear more about the work that we do throughout the year and then our trips abroad.
And there'll be a silent auction with items from both the Malawi and Philippines and lots of other exciting items too.
If I was a student looking to get involved in Engineers Without Borders, how would I go about doing that?
We have meetings every Thursday night from 7 to 8 p.m. in GOR 205. You're also welcome to find us on our website, www.ewb-ud.org. We're also on Facebook, Engineers Without Borders, University of Delaware. We're very active on Facebook, very active with our website. You can also email us at ewb.udel@gmail.com. And if any of this is confusing, I say this at every meeting, but it's all on the website. Our schedule of events is there. The calendar is up to date. And we always encourage new students to come out. No matter what time of the semester it is, there's always a spot for you.
Natalie, Meredith, Sarah, so great to have you. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.campusvoices.org. www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.